Tranzier and staff and some people in the audience. Is there any citizen comments? Good for the Zoom person. Move on to minutes for correction and approval.
Pretty good.
Alright. Can we just skip, does anybody care if we skip to number 5? And then do those and do the ones playlist. Go to EDC 20-24-30 East Village of Westbury. A, ordinance repealing the plan unit document agreement for East Village of Westbury. And B, ordinance approving the memorandum of understanding regarding the East Village of Westbury.
Okay, so a little history, if you recall, or if you don't, in 1997 the city annexed the portion of the property and entered into an annexation agreement for about 260 acres. And then subsequent to that, they annexed another 70 acres, bringing the total to a little bit over 300 acres for the site for PUD called Westbury, East Westbury. The PUD had commercial, single-family, multifamily land uses, consisting of roughly about 890 dwelling units, 15-acre school site, and 30-acre commercial parcel, and parkland within 9 pods that were identified for the different land uses. So a portion of the property in the northwest corner quadrant was utilized for green organics, if you recall, for a period of about 6 years, 6 or 7 years, so 2014 to 2023. So fast forward a little bit, the city did approve a final plat for pod 6 of the development, which consisted of 85 single family lots in 2005, but it was never recorded. But then in 2006, the city began to confirm some of the developer obligations in the PUD. The city did extend funds for the cost of designing, engineering, and installing a sanitary sewer interceptor, for which the East Westbury, East Village of Westbury was responsible for about $1.78 million, which approximately $1.26 million remains outstanding. The developer was also required to construct an outfall storm sewer at the cost of $500,000, which the city also constructed. So the property sat fallow for several years, never made it to the final plat, never developed, and 8 successor property owners assumed the property after various foreclosures on the site. So currently, these 8 property owners are seeking to repeal the entitlements of the PUD, except for the owner of Pod 6, which had the 85 units, plus an additional area that was dedicated for multifamily, and to unburden themselves with the obligations of the site so that they can develop as it naturally, organically will in the future. So the petitioners are asking for the repeal, which has certain standards that we've required as provisions of the repeal of the ordinance. Zoning, the underlying zoning will remain for all lots as R2, except for the pod, where the owner, the developer will then continue to retain their R2 and R4 multifamily residential zoning district. Some of the owners have requested legal non-conforming status. The PUD will allow for a separate phase 1 development agreement with the owners of Pod 6, which I don't know if I mentioned that is called Chicago WB. Future approvals, of course, will have to go through the traditional approval process. The school and park dedication release is contingent upon a written release from the school district stating that they are going to give up that site, that 15-acre dedicated site. For the property, the city attorney is currently working with the school district to secure that written release. And then development fees of almost $420,000 will be paid to the city from the developer of Pod 6 to reconcile the outstanding financial obligations that they burdened the city with. Additionally, and just recently, the city is also going to request an 18-month deadline to secure the release from the school district and to execute that development agreement with the city for the development of Pod 6. We reached out to the petitioner, actually the developer of that site, and they are okay with that timeline. So that will be in an amended version of this agreement, which will be presented at the May 14th meeting for the City Council. Staff is supportive of this. It's been a couple of years in the making. Representative of some of the petition of the successor owners are here tonight. If you have any questions.
I'm fine with that.
You good?
I don't have a problem with it. Sat there in the developer, how long? 20 years almost?
Yeah.
I'll go. Just to get a little background on this one real quick. So the original annexation agreement, I didn't have all the agreements. So.
Sure.
Original versus the additional seven, where was the delineation between the parcels?
So the delineation of the parcels or delineation of when the
annexation? For the annexation agreement parcels, because there was the original 97.
Right.
And then there was the 2004.
Correct.
So what was the delineation of the land?
The additional four was with the petition, it was the undesser's portion. So the original 260 were Richard and Henrietta undesser, and then the second portion was Ocean Atlantic and undesser. So I think it was,
so was
the
northern portion.
Yeah, the northern portion.
Okay. So the original 97, that has expired because there was a new annexation agreement in 2004 for that territory. So we're at the 20-year mark.
The city's position is the entire annexation agreement has expired because we used the 1997 start date.
And that's what I wanted to make sure is we're going by the 97, even though there was a
correct amendment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but 2004, even at that, I assume we're probably within months of the 2004 date. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that annexation agreement is null. That's all done. Right. So it's annexed. Okay, that's, I wanted to make sure of that. Mm-hmm. We have the multiple iterations of PUDs on this piece. The final plat for the southeast corner, that final plat is null. It's beyond the 1 year term, so that'll have to be redone.
Correct, to our current standards as well.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I assume with that we'll give some consideration to, the utilities that are in the ground. Obviously there's a lot that goes into that, but also the site plan, the actual layout of it. The main east-west road that was north of the creek, generally speaking, connecting down the curve. Now that Water Park Way is in, I assume that we would be given some deference to that connection, the alignment.
So we have not received an updated land plan from the developer. We have been in conversation. EI has gone out and updated punch lists throughout the years. So until we get that final land plan as part of the development agreement, we'll see where the alignment happens.
Because I just want to, these are points of, we're doing a development agreement, we're doing a memorandum right now, but this memorandum, I want to make sure that the points that we're going to are going to be addressed and identified. The land plan as it is, everything was put in the ground at risk.
Mm-hmm.
So that's subject to change, possibly. So that's what I want to make sure we're clear of, and I'm sure they do understand that. Most developers do. The release of the park and school site. That releases them of the land obligation, but not of the cash obligation, I assume?
Correct. So at any time a new development comes in, they can either pay cash in lieu of or provide the requisite amount of land dedicated.
So when the development agreement comes in for the southeast, that will be based on cash, no land other than, I assume,
unless
small
that park
site
is,
would remain possibly.
If it's a public park, if they dedicate it to us.
Because, as we said, site plan, this site plan that we see in the packet may not be the plan they may strike.
Absolutely.
But they're retaining entitlement rights based on what is on the plan today, which would be the single family, multi-family, and then the townhomes.
Yeah, so the single family is 85 units, and then the multifamily is over 300 units or so that they're going to retain their townhomes. So
they're all townhomes.
They're all townhomes. Yeah.
Okay, so that's good. That's the release. I just want to make sure because the PUD is, we're releasing all of the current PUD. Entering into a new community, or the talk. Is that how I'm interpreting that?
So we're repealing the PUD with the exception of the terms that were established for density and land use for the Pod 6.
Why would we not just repeal it in its entirety, create a new with those terms as compared to retaining the legacy and creating a...
Because the only thing that we're retaining is the zoning and the density, and then the development agreement that's subsequent that has to be done within 18 months will spell out all of the new requirements for that development of that site.
Somewhat moot because they're not, the differentiation between the two, because they're not going to be able to move forward with anything without getting a subsequent development agreement from us.
And I'm just...
This stops them from having to go through the rezoning process again. They
correct.
Want to retain all of their original
understood. I just, Dan, you know this, I just went through a similar process like this in Oswego for a kind of a piece like this.
For the people with your name.
Yes. So I'm very familiar with this type of process we're going through to, you know, now this one was a step behind because it didn't have the final plat in place.
Correct.
So you don't have to worry about those type of issues of the existing plat being in place, but there's a lot of pieces. So I just want to make sure that this, the process that we're going through with the memorandum of understanding is good. We're not going to have any hangups with that. I know this has been a long
correct.
Time through, but the, I have a little hesitation on the repeal. I shouldn't say repeal. Repeal is fine, but it's retaining those few rights before we know what the rest of the terms are. That's kind of the...
So if you don't like the rest of the terms at a later date, you say no to them, and then everything ends
force
up
it to
terming out in 18
right.
months, and then it reverts back to where we were.
Correct.
Now, when we repeal, so we repeal, but we're grandfathering in existing rights for the, everything to the north of the
for the single-family residential who asked for legal non-conformity.
Yeah, they're retaining correct. Those rights because that's
correct.
What's been established, and we don't want to impede on those rights that they have right now.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll be able to do that and keep those rights, which is good. But they'll be subject to any new development agreement terms. They're not going to be having anything else other than the those rights and the R2.
Correct.
That's it.
Correct. They will be unburdened with other obligations.
And that's our, based on how we've been processing projects right now, anything that reverts back, we want it, are we reverting it back to just R2 as the basic?
Correct,
okay.
R2.
So this is not different than anybody else's. The difference is the rights that they're retaining for existing uses. And then the last one, the fees, they're gonna pay approximately $418,000. Obviously, we went through those other fees. There's the $2 million, roughly, between the two fees that were outlined in here.
Correct.
What's the basis for not pursuing those, or will those in some way be pursued?
So if you back out the sewer connection fees, which were pledged at the time to
mm-hmm.
offset the northern branches of the Rob Roy Sanitary Sewer, just like the $1.8 million or whatever, those are just going to be collected at time of building permit.
Okay.
So we aren't foregoing that revenue.
It's just the process.
Yeah,
we're
not collecting it up front, you know,
okay.
20 years later or whatever it ends up being, which is what was contemplated back then. So basically the $418,000 represents the storm sewer outfall pledge that was made, which was just a promise basically
mm-hmm.
to pay that didn't ever come to, and then various development engineering and legal
costs
that would have went through.
Right.
And I don't remember, was it 50% or was it?
So I was 300,000 was
okay.
for, yeah, it was 50% because if you had
okay.
the 300 and the 5, it's
so that's
eight.
What it represents is 50% of the outstanding,
mm-hmm.
you know, bad debt that was written off that won't be collected through other means.
Okay.
So
we were going to pursue just a different venue for it. Okay.
Yep.
All right. And
then, debt has been written off long ago, so this basically just is classified as new revenue for us.
Yeah, new revenue that comes in.
First things they did.
Yeah. We have, so there's copies of the memorandums of understanding for each of the different
correct.
Copies. Some signed, some not, but you mentioned that.
All have been signed
okay.
and notarized.
Okay, so they all are. I thought one wasn't, but maybe I missed that. And then But there was a change that you're bringing forward next week?
Correct. That was a recommendation to have an 18-month deadline.
And will that be, that's only for the one parcel, or the one, the southeast?
It'll be reflected in the ordinance.
Correct.
Gets covered over the entire deal. Okay. So, and that's just our deadline saying we're basically going to repeal our own ordinance and deal if the developer can't.
So 18 months, if it doesn't happen or goes back, we don't
correct.
Just.
Correct.
Okay. Okay.
Anybody else? Huh?
I've got a couple.
Yes.
Just brief comments. Dan Nagel is the property owner of about 74 acres on the west side of the drainage ditch. And you've heard presentation. He's leasing it to NextAmp for a solar array facility. And then I also represent Mr. and Mrs. Toro. Marilex is participating tonight remotely. They have the nice house that Undesser's had in a former turkey processing plant. And as Christy aptly pointed out, you're leaving them as they are. So we're totally fine with the repeal, and maybe a reference to Easter. Our view was it was like Moses, let our PUD go. We wanted to be here months ago, so we're fine. On both counts.
Move on. EDC 2024-31 Blackberry Oaks Kennedy Road Expansion and Golf Clubhouse Annexation.
Okay, so the petitioner in this case is Chicago Title Land and Trust Company. They're successor to the American National Bank Trust, which owns the property for the golf course. So Blackberry Oaks has a portion of land, it's about 5 acres that is unincorporated, that is used for commercial purposes for their clubhouse. The city is looking to annex just that portion of the golf facility because we are looking at doing construction along Kennedy Road, and we needed to acquire some land and some easements, and it was just appropriate for us to annex the parcel, break it into the city. Upon annexation, all land is zoned in the R1 district, golf courses, as well as any other associated land uses like the retail component is permitted in the R1 district, so there's no need for rezoning. The terms of the annexation agreement are laid out. Landscaping is a big component of this. The city is going to remove about 13 large oak trees currently on the subject property along Kennedy Road. In exchange, the city is going to install 60 small trees, about 30 medium trees, and about 15 large trees, or a mixture thereof, equating to about a total of 60 trees. The city agrees we're going to replace any dead trees for a period of up to 8 years following the initial installation, and all property taxes levied upon the property by the city will be rebated to the owner for a period of 10 years. They will gain access to municipal water. The installation will be provided free of charge by the city, but standard user rates will apply after that. And then the city agrees that no sewer service shall be charged until that the owner connects to a sewer line. The terms of the agreement are binding for a period of 20 years. It is also consistent with the comprehensive plan upon annexation because we viewed this area as parks and open space, so there will be no need to amend our comprehensive plan in the future. This will go before City Council for a public hearing on May 14th and hopefully with final vote on May 20th.
Any questions on this one?
I just wondered if anyone knows if on-course sales are deemed to have occurred in the clubhouse. So when the beer girl's out on the fifth hole selling a round to the guys, or whoever's playing, does it come out of the register in what will be the city of Yorkville, or is it considered a county sale?
That was our assumption, and their attorney's assumption was that would be included. Okay. Because the liquor license is issued to the physical space.
So it would be coming out. Okay.
And if that's not the case, we will lose on-course sales, but we'll have everything else, restaurant, pro shop, registration fees, et cetera.
Okay, so we'll get the tax for the greens fees and the golf gloves and just a dozen golf balls.
Yep.
Do they have a, have they made any reference to when they think they might connect the water?
I don't think we've pinned down a timeline yet. As far as I know, it was a somewhat imminent project and request on their part, so I just don't think that we've scheduled it out or anything.
Sorry. And then the only other thing I had was the description of the trees, how we have that. Very ambiguous. 60 small trees, 30 medium trees, or 15 small trees, or the equivalent. Can we go into detail on what?
That's the output calculation from our tree preservation ordinance. So with the amount of trees that we're taking out, that's what we're required is the upper end limits. Yeah, so it can be a combination thereof. And really, we'll probably just look at it from a dollar perspective and say, you know, here are the three options. You know, if you want a couple small ones and a couple medium ones instead of.
But does our ordinance say that they need to be small, medium trees, or is there a caliper size equivalent to it?
There's definitions within the ordinance. I don't recall what they
there's
are.
There's a caliper size.
But does the term medium tree, small tree,
is
large
that
tree?
Used? No.
Okay. I have an issue with that because it's a ambiguous, undefined bit of language. I mean, we could go in there with 60 three-quarter inch widths and say we're compliant based on the way this reads, or you come in there with large trees, you know, two-inch trees.
We'll come up with something that's a little bit more descriptive, though.
Because, like I said, the way I read this is you can come in with 15 large trees, and that is acceptable for the equivalent of 60, if they're the large trees. If you go in, say you go in with 15 four-inch, five-inch caliper trees, caliper equivalency would be the same as if you're going in with 61 and a half inch trees.
Sure.
See what I'm getting at? That's my issue is we need an equivalency there that provide something a little more concrete.
Understood.
Otherwise, this is
good. And, anybody else? All right, move on. UDC 2024-32, Pinal County Petition 24-4, mile and a half review of 1520 Campbell Drive.
Okay. So this property is owned by the YMCA, the Fox Valley family YMCA. The petitioner is Larry Nelson. This request is for site plan approval through Kendall County. If you recall, this property was annexed into Yorkville for a period of time. It was called the Bristol Club. It was zoned to B3. Fox Valley acquired the property in 2015 with the intent of constructing that recreational facility, but after engaging the city about certain building code regulations, they applied for and was granted de-annexation. So there's a settlement agreement of that de-annexation, which is provided in your packet. What they're currently proposing right now as an unincorporated parcel, they're zoned B4. They're looking to build a facility consisting of an actual YMCA with a swimming pool, daycare facility, and parking area. It'll be built in phases. Total land area or total development area for the building is about 150,000 square feet with a total of about 283 parking spaces. Right now, the site will utilize septic system for sanitary waste as well as well water for potable water and fire suppression. They are required to fire suppress the system. However, the plans do not clearly indicate where the location of the well will be. That is a question that we're asking as part of our review, as well as EEI has did their own review and had some similar questions related to stormwater management and final engineering plans, specifically in regards to grading. Our comprehensive plan deems this site or saw this site designation for estate conservation as well as agriculture. So if this does get approved by Kendall County, we'd have to revisit our land, future land use designation and probably go with a destination commercial land use change in this particular area. This will be going to PZC tomorrow night for further feedback. But if you have any feedback, I'd be happy to take that with me and provide it to PZC.
For the settlement agreement, whose building code would this go under?
It would go under the county.
Pete, you got anything?
County's building
building code is relatively identical to the city's building code because the city provided its research to the county for their update, as we will for the next update upon request.
Anything else? All right, I'm with the. EDC 2024-33, Kendall County Petition 24-5, Mile Line Review of 7709 and 7731, Bent Grass Circle, lots 223 and 224 of Whitetail Ridge.
Yes, so the petitioners George and Heidi Oliver are requesting an approval of a plat of vacation to vacate the existing combined 10-foot drainage and utility easement between lots 223 and 224 within the Whitetail Ridge subdivision for the purpose of constructing a home in the center of the combined lots. It is located at 7709 and 7731 Bentgrass Circle, which is generally located at the north of East Schoolhouse Road, also known as Illinois Route 126 between Grove Road and Hopkins Road in unincorporated Kendall County. The properties are platted as two separate parcels that total approximately 66,960 square feet. Currently, the property is unimproved and is approximately a mile and a half east of the Prestwick of Ashley Point subdivision. WBK Engineering, who is the county's engineering consultant, reviewed the vacation of the easement from a drainage perspective and does not oppose the request. And the Whitetail Ridge HOA is also agreeable to the request. Per the comprehensive plan, the designation is estate/conservation residential. And with its current land use, with an open space golf course development and the proposed detached single family house on a 1.5 acre lot, is consistent with the comprehensive plan and the land use designation. So the proposed plat of vacation does not alter the land use. Staff does not oppose the request because it wouldn't affect the existing drainage within the planned development, and it is consistent with the comprehensive plan, and the vacation of the drainage and utility easement will not affect the future land use, as it will remain residential in nature. But if you all have any comments or questions, I can also take that to PCC tomorrow.
Must be nice.
Then
I'm fine with that.
I don't live in Whitetail Ridge. What do the residents think?
We're all for it. I represent the petitioners, and it's one shot away from me. Really nice couple, so happy to have them. And our school system with the tax revenue will be so well.
I'm sure any, you know what, square footage of the house by any chance?
I don't precisely, but it's over 3,500.
Oh, I'm sure that.
It's a nice, comfortable home on a big lot.
Yeah. And no children. They're a little bit younger than I, late 60s.
Good for them.
This school district really will appreciate it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Move on to EDC 2024-34, Kendall County Petition 24-06. Mile and a half review, 7789 Route 47.
Yes, so the petitioner here is Jerry Sturchola on behalf of A&D Properties LLC, who are the owners of the property. He is requesting an approval to a map amendment from B3 Highway Business District to M1 Limited Manufacturing District to operate a trucking business for the storage and sale of semi-trailers, small trailers, semi-tractors, and similar uses. Again, the property is located at 7789 Route 47 on the west side of Route 47. The property consists of two parcels that total around 16.4 acres, and there are two existing buildings. The building to the north is about 5,366 square feet, and the building to the south is approximately 11,300 square feet. Part of the property is also vacant, and the site is occupied by several trucks. The property fronts Route 47 and has one access point off of Route 47. There is also a declaration lane for southbound traffic off of Route 47, and it also has one access point off of Conservation Drive. The property is immediately southwest of Yorkville's corporate boundary and is approximately 0.3 miles from the Wendat Ridge subdivision. In 1975, the property was rezoned to B3 Highway Business District by Kendall County from A1 Agricultural District. And then as of the date the memo was sent by the Kendall County Department of Planning, Building, and Zoning, which was March 20th, 2024, the petitioner is working on a site approval plan, but for now the petitioner will continue to use the existing site as is. As for the comprehensive plan, it is estate/conservation residential and agricultural zoned, which some background of Kendall County that's important to mention is that a proposal was submitted in December by Granco FS Incorporated, who are the owners, and AB Schwartz LLC, the contract purchaser. They proposed an amendment to the Kendall County future land use map from transportation corridor to mixed use business for an approximate 20 acre property consisting of five parcels, commonly known as 8115 Route 47, which is 0.4 miles away from the proposed map amendment property of 7789 Route 47. And then as a result, an amendment to the Kendall County future land use map was made, and the proposal by the petitioners, Jerry Sturciola, on behalf of A&D Properties, is consistent with Kendall County's recent changes. So if Yorkville were to consider the proposal, a review of the comprehensive plan update for additional industrial land use would need to be discussed. And then as for staff comments, we are seeking input, but we don't oppose.
Dane, do you represent?
I do. For the record, Daniel J. Kramer, my address is 1107A South Bridge Street, Yorkville, Illinois. I'm an attorney licensed to practice law. And I have to give kudos to the staff member being able to say Jerry's last name. I've known him 2 years and I can't pronounce it. And there is a bit of irony about this tonight that I didn't even think about. When I was way younger than Mr. Transier and first started being a lawyer, my very first zoning case 46 years ago was representing Dan Nagel, his dad and uncle, who owned a dairy farm next to my family's little farmette in Batavia. And I think we finished the last outlot in that about 2 years ago. The second to the earliest zoning I ever did was actually in this building on Route 47. And you folks probably saw the ugly, kind of yellow shaded building on the west side of 47. If you ever went to the USDA office, or if you remember across Lutheran, it just sat there looking forlorn for a long time. Back in the 70s, the county, for whatever reason, their zoning ordinance didn't permit farm implement sales in A1, which they do now as an A1 special use. So we had to go through and zone it B3, and it was pretty controversial, even though we were a much more agricultural county back then, introducing business zoning that far out. Yorkville was only about 2,500 people then. There was nothing but Cross Lutheran, not even IDOT out there then. But the county granted it. And the three individuals were local residents here. They ran an international harvester dealership. And my kids' eyes roll when I talk to them about the early 80s when Prime was at 20 and I still had hair. Well, Prime at 20 killed International Harvester as a manufacturer. They went bankrupt. The three individuals lost everything, including the property. It was sold at a foreclosure auction probably sometime in the mid-80s. To a gentleman named Harry Kuhn, and I know you've seen his trucks years ago. He ran a large asphalt and cement plant over in Wheaton and had temporary ones set all over. He and Aurora Blacktop basically did all the asphalting in this area. Harry died, and probably within 6 months, his children sold the building. It's been through about three owners, sat totally vacant. So what Jerry is planning and doing, and I do want to correct one count or initial part of the report, he is not going to run a trucking business or trucking terminal out of it. So you're not going to have a high volume of trucks at all. He runs over in Shorewood on the east side of 59. If you drove down there, really nice, that faux wrought iron fence. He sells, and he's a dealer for Fruhoff Manufacturing. Fruhoff does the big semi-trailers. They don't do any tractors at all. So he does get older trailers in, and he generally sends them right to an auction. He just doesn't normally keep them. If you drove out there right now, you'd say, Kramer, what did you tell us? Because there are quite a number of old trailers out there, and there is a story behind that. He had some in trade a few years ago, and Plano Molding came to him and said, we have no warehouse space. We'll take them, park them at Plano and Sandwich at our manufacturing facilities, and they used them for cold storage up until about 6 months ago. They said at this point their storage needs are down to nothing, so they said, come and take them all away. So those are going to get gone here. They're not permanent fixtures. They're not staying. Couple other points I think are really important is he's agreed he will only operate out of the one entrance on 47. So we've actually in a memo agreement with the Township Road Commissioner, the conservation drive that goes west up to the ag facility, that's going to be posted with a 10,000 pound limit. And it's an actual totally dedicated township road all the way to Jerry's west property line. But it's only built maybe 100 feet beyond the ag building with the T turnaround. So there's about a fourth of it that's just dirt. So the county said, look, if you want to cross Conservation Drive to build another building on the north side of the vacant parcel, we're fine with that. Build whatever driveway you want. But the memo agreement says, look, if the county ever or township wants to extend the road to the west, you got to make sure your driveway will hold trucks. And we get our road to do whatever we want with, and we're fine with that. The ugly yellow is gone. It's now a kind of a nice composite dark gray, but he's gonna gussy it up more with a good landscape plan, totally blacktop the parking area. He is trying to get a semi-tractor dealership because the trailers are a huge sales tax item, so the county's licking their chops in that. It'd be nice if you could do the semi-tractors too, but for the most part, there won't be used vehicles. There will be all new stuff. So we'd ask for a positive recommendation, and we're happy to bring good business to the county.
I'm okay with that.
You answered my question about Conservation Drive, so.
There you go.
And I got reminded at County ZPAC, which is their technical office heads, and the county highway engineer said, well, you were young and green then, but you were experienced by the time the ag building went in. You did the zoning and that, and you hired a really bright young engineer to design all that. That young engineer was our then city engineer, Fran Klaus, who then left the city and went to the county.
All right, we'll go back to number one now.
Thanks so much for your time.
No problem.
Thanks.
Have a good one. EDC 2024-26 building permit report for March.
All right. In March, we issued 133 permits, 31 single-family detached dwellings, 16 miscellaneous commercial. You know, keeping busy. So, just going up from there, hopefully, and we have plenty sitting around on the desk right now, ready to issue. So.
All right, EDC 2024-27, building inspection reports for March.
All right, in March, we end up doing 586 inspections, vast majority single family detached. We're still waiting for a bunch of the multifamily homes to start, and we have the Bristol Bay one up there. If they get going on that end of this month, hopefully, they keep telling me that, so until it doesn't happen, I'll believe it. But we're on top of it, and once that starts, it'll be back to craziness. So,
property maintenance reports for March.
All right. Okay. In March, all of our, the vast majority of our ones came back as compliant and they got closed. The ones that were in violation, Beaver Street for noise occupancy issues, that was people kind of living in the wrong spot, which was for people living there. You know, they had a generators and things running all hours of the night, so that has been solved as of now. it was solved last year as well, and it came back, and now it's solved again, so hopefully we can keep it that way, but we'll keep monitoring it. And you know, the unsafe conditions ones, those ones were for just select random issues. One of them was the Popeyes and not having proper cleaning of the hood system and whatnot. And we addressed that with the current owner multiple times, and the fire department attempted to. We just went right to corporate. Reportedly, from what corporate told me, is they find the owner of the, that business owns 60 Popeyes, I think, or something like that, or 55 or something. And they were fined $5,000 per Popeyes franchise they owned. And they were told that if it happens again, it'll be $10,000. And if it happens again, they'll have their franchise revoked and they'll force them to sell it to someone else. Apparently, Popeyes demands a certain standard, and that wasn't up to it. So they're having corporate inspectors come down once a month for the next calendar year to inspect all this franchisees' Popeyes. So we just found that out the other day. They Popeyes corporate called and let us know that. So I was, they wanted to know if we wanted to meet out there and check that. I said, no, we're, fire department goes out and we're fine as long as, so they told us any other issues we have with any of their franchisees to feel free to reach directly out to them and they will handle it.
Wow.
So it's very nice to have a very good corporate response like that. We generally don't get that.
I was going to say, what we got.
So anyway, that's pretty much it.
Finally, EDC 2024-29 Economic Development Report.
Okay, and you have your report in the packet, and I just wanted to add that this Thursday we are meeting with Sonny Shaw from the Holiday Inn, and he is going to be bringing us his plans for the new hotel, which is referred to on here, but he had to adjust it a little bit, make a couple changes. So, and he is in the process of getting his flag approved. He doesn't have it in his hands yet, but I did meet with the gentleman from the flag, so I know that the process has begun. So good news on that. So, and he'll get started pretty quickly once he gets started. Just also want to mention this, you know, our hometown takeover, which is going to be, you know, coming up in June. And a lot of businesses really helped us out with this, and this is going to be an exciting adventure for all of us to participate in. So, go team.
Any questions or comments on that? Any old business? None? Any additional business? None. All right, we're out of here. We adjourn.
Thank you.